start.
Bakasha.
Bakasha. Okay. I like support.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like empty chairs. Maybe move up.
Yeah.
Okay, Birshut Arab Rabbanim, and with the suggestion of Rav Heller Shlita, we decided to have a kind of a eulogy or Sha'at Iyun, study hour in the memory of the great rabbi, Rosh Yeshiva, Kabbalist, intellectual, Torah thinker, you name it, he had all of it, Rav Moshe Shapira Zatzal, who passed away Motzei Shabbat on Asara Betevet 4 days ago. And I'm going to explain more or less, as much as time allows me, who was he and why does he deserve so much attention that we are giving him here, but it's all over Yerushalayim and the Torah world, including Yeshiva University, I'm sure, where he had many Talmidim, and all over the world. He was not very well known. I don't know if so many among you have heard his name, Moshe Shapira. It's also like kind of a common name, Moshe Shapira Zatzal. It's still difficult for me to say Zatzal, I always would say Shlita. But he was a kind of a person that was very well known and very much admired among the connoisseurs of Torah, among the, you know, the cognizanti, those people who really know what qualities, who are the special leaders, who are not so well known publicly to the general public, who do not have official positions sometimes, and yet they are the ones who really pull the strings behind the whole structure of the certain establishment. And in this case, we are not talking about a certain establishment, we are talking about Torah learning, all disciplines of Torah. Rav Shapira Zatzal, who passed away at the age of 82 after terrible illness, I still heard him. It was a shock for us, not only because every godel and every beloved person, teacher, close, even a neighbor, passes away, that of course shocks you. I still heard him before Tisha B'Av. We would convene about 40 Ramim, Rabbonim, Rashi Yeshivot, only by permission, attending a shiur that went on for about 30 years, every Friday, between 1 and 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. My wife would be happy that I'm leaving her alone to cook the chont. But in any case, I had the zchut to learn by Rav Shapira almost half a century. I'm not that old, but I am old. And I started very young to learn. He was my Rabbi in Yeshiva in Beit HaTalmud, a Yeshiva that does not exist anymore, Rabbi Dov Schwarzman. Later on, it became a Yeshiva of Rabbi Hutner Zatzal. But besides, I had the zchut to be participant in this so-called select shiur. And above all, Rav Shapira Zatzal was the one that he was the advisor, the person who recommended me as the actual founder through the Volson, Volson Foundation from Lawrence, great Torah philanthropist, Zev Volson Zatzal. And Rav Shapira was like the president and the rabbi of this educational projects of the Volson Foundation all over the world, especially of Kiruv. And I came to him 17 years ago with the idea that we have to set up an institution and a kollel. I'm not trying to advertise it, just to explain it. Rav Kotler, Yibadel L'Chaim Arukim, can attest of it was a very good institution that was very unique in two, three things. it was most unique as I'm looking back that Rav Shapira was our mentor and president and actual Rosh Kollel above the Rosh Kollel. The actual Rosh Kollel were myself and my partner Rav Fodor, one of the Rosh Yeshivot of Netiv Meir for many years and Or Yerushalayim. And we set up an institution to prepare Ramim. Not just to learn, just, it's never just, but when you learn, but Lilmud al menat lelamed, how to become a better focused Torah Ram and teacher. And Rav Shapira with his shurim really did that. He guided us, and we ourselves did many things around it. And the concept was also to incorporate together. And it was something unique. It's still, I'm sorry to say, it still exists, but much smaller numbers, because the Bolson Foundation stopped to fund us. It's still gone. To incorporate together about 50% from the Zionist Yeshivot, excellent students, and 50% from the Haredi Yeshivot. And this mingling, this was like a mutual... fertilization of minds. It was great. And I think from many years it was a great success. Now we go on, we are doing also part of the Volson Foundation projects, Nefesh Yehudi, which means to learn Chavruta with non-observant students all over Yerushalayim, but this is also like a international project. It exists also in Russia and in France and in America. It's called Nefesh Yehudi. And Rav Shapira was the president of the Roshiva of all this. Besides, he was Roshiva in Tifrach, he was Roshiva in Beta Talmud, he was Rosh Kollel in Machon Eri Fishel, which was founded by Rav Kook many years ago, where they prepared Rabbonim. And he had his own kollel and his own yeshiva and yeshiva Balei Tshuva. And when you, if you come to Beit Vagan or elsewhere, you see about 20 or 25 institutions that put up, mourning announcements, remembering him. But because again, it's like it was, I remember when Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Zatzal was Niftar. There were 300,000 people, according to the estimation of the police, in his funeral. And the Aretz, which is the Israeli New York Times, the organ, we would say, of Israeli left-wing intelligentsia, they had a kind of headline, how come we never heard of him? It was 20 years ago, 300,000 people coming to his levaya, never heard of him. The same can be said to some extent about Rav Moshe Shapira. Like the way that he became very famous for a minute, and he was very much almost abhorring and really trying to be a very private person. He really hated the limelight of public formalities and this kind of things. But when he died, so Sunday, there was all over the net, the web, maybe also in the papers and in TV, one of the most important politicians in Israel. Now he's semi-retired for a while. He's a young man, he's only 50, I think. He's Gideon Saar. Gideon Saar was the Minister of Education. And Gideon Saar, the Minister of Education, is a Likudnik, and Bibi is very afraid of him because he's a possible competition. He might come back as an alternative. A very smart guy, a lawyer in the profession, but really a thinker and a very special person. I happen to have met him through Rav Moshe once. He learned Chavruta with Rav Moshe Shapira the past 10 years, and he became Shomer Shabbat and other things lately. Nobody would imagine he would disappear from the government or Knesset activities for a couple of hours every Monday or Tuesday and would travel to Beit Vagan, to the house of Ramesh Shapira Zatzal, and would learn Chavruta. Who could influence such a person? Of course, they are like wonder rabbis. He wasn't a wonder rabbi. He was a real Litvak, hardcore Litvak. Very rational, very sharp, Rambamist, Talmid of Rav of Brisk. I mean, no voodoo and no this kind of things, no miracles. I'm sure there are Hasidim around him who would tell miracles about him. That's what happens, especially Achremut Kedoshim. But he was a real ambassador of Malchut Shamayim, especially to the intellectuals, to the smart people, who would be able to tell you in beautiful, very articulate language, Hebrew, sometimes in English. He didn't know English so well. He was a Roshiv in Stamford, Connecticut for 5 years. He didn't know English so well, but he did master many, many of the five-syllable fancy words or phrases that he would be able often to quote. Such ones that even the Americans in the shul would not understand. I had to translate to them. He was a real ambassador through mastering as an autodidact. He didn't have any degrees or whatever. Autodidact, you know, tremendous knowledge of philosophy, world literature, history, other things. His shul was so rich, especially the shurim that were given to the more intimate, you know, closer talmidim of his. It was so rich, it contained always halacha, a quote from Rav Dessler, who was his father's uncle, Michtam Eliyahu. Something from Plato and something from Sartre, the great French philosopher, or whatever. A beautiful anecdote, something folkloristic, a very sharp, you know, sophisticated joke, he had a tremendous sense of humor. All these things made him such a unique personality. And I want to say a Dvar Torah that I heard from him that can, you know, encapsulate and really, you know, say something about the essence of his special, unique, fascinating contribution to the Torah world, and also to me personally. I owe him a lot. This week he was mistalik. He departed Alav Besara Shamayim on Asara Betevet. And Asara Betevet is a tanit, is a fast that we have, that is marking the beginning of the siege of Jerusalem, which led eventually to the, you know, destruction of the walls and ultimately burning down the Beit HaMikdash. That is Asara Betevet. Now, Asara Betevet, we fasted on Sunday, say the Matzora in Jerusalem. But I always had this kasha, but I heard him also, it was Mechaven, he asked this kasha. I mean, this is just a stage towards the ultimate tragedy of burning down the temple, of the Churban. So why do we make such an issue of this particular stage, that the siege on Yerushalayim started on Asara Betevet? Maybe the same token, we could have another Tanit, not Arba Taniot, but Chamesh Taniot or more, when the Babylonian troops crossed the border from Babylon to Judea. Or when Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian emperor, decided this master, this sinister master plan to conquer Eretz Israel and destroy the Beit HaMikdash. All these dates, we don't even know about them. So why did the Nevim, so Takanat Nevim, the Arba Taniot, Asara Betevet, Yudzayim Betamuz, Tisha B'Av, and Tzom Gedalia, all have to do with the Churban. What was so particular and so unique about the siege of Yerushalayim that it warranted a Tanit by itself? We know that, for instance, he would always bring a good moshel. So in this case, it's my moshel, but it's from his teachings, basically, his way of thinking. When a person, lo aleinu, dies, he was sick with cancer, okay? So the aloha is that, the relatives sit shiva, and on that date when he passed away or was buried, so that date is commemorated, shloshim and Yud Bet Chodesh, then, your side, you say Kaddish, go up, go to the kever. nobody would mark and make another kind of minagei avilut over the day when the doctors told this poor person that he is terminally ill, or the date when he was operated on by great doctors and whatever, and the operation surgery did not help, it failed. At that time, the family was extremely shocked, and they understood that this is leading towards the worst tragedy, that their dear relative, father or brother or son or whatever, is going to die, as it happens very often. But these dates are not commemorated because, you know, in halacha, kim lebed rabba mine, we have the big date, the death. And that already, like, contains all the other feelings of bereavement, of sorrow, of tragic feeling that causes the mourning. So the same applies to Churban Beit HaMikdash, is always compared to death, the tzaddikim or whatever. Churban Beit HaMikdash already contains all the elements and the ideas of the beginning of the galut, of the destruction of everything. Why do we have to add to it also this stage, this preliminary stage of the beginning of this tragedy, which is not for sure the beginning or the only beginning, the siege on Jerusalem? So Rav Moshe Shapira Zatzal gave a typical, very profound, interesting answer. He said that Asara Betevet is, besides being a stage towards the destruction of the temple, it is also independently a very tragic event, the siege on Jerusalem. Because like the Maral would say, I don't know if he says it on this particular point, but the Maral would probably say, if he would address this question, that when we are talking about siege, we are not just talking about what a siege does. When a city is besieged, okay, we don't know about it, Baruch Hashem, but we have neighbors in, you know, in Halab, not so far. What does it mean to be besieged? Even before the atrocities begin, it means you are already a trapped animal. You are not a free human being anymore when you are besieged. It's not just the physical siege, it's the mentality which it causes, and the spiritual siege, which means it narrows, it limits you, and you become narrow-minded. You become, like, you know, even paranoid. You become devastated, traumatized constantly. And that causes, you know, there is this saying, when the cannons shoot, the muses are asleep. Like, you cannot really think and be creative and be Oved Hashem, especially the simple terms, when you are you live in mortal fear, even if things did not start yet, then things become situation becomes more aggravated, and it ends up with killing and churban. But the narrow-mindedness, it is something, of Shapira Zatzal said, it was something that started on Asara Betevet as a symbolic a manifestation of the physical siege, and that narrow-mindedness that limited Klal Yisrael's thinking, Torah understanding, Nevuah, all this like kind of started, germinated, the seed of it was at Asara Betevet. And that goes on all through the Galut, till this very day, till Mashiach comes. Then what the Rambam says, what does Rambam say? Mala'a ha'aretz de'ah. K'mayim la'ayim, mayim mechassim. Then the narrow-mindedness will disappear and, you know, evaporate in thin air. And then again, the broad-mindedness, the Gilui Shechina, which is the reason, the background for broad-mindedness, will be restored, all the lost glory of Klal Yisrael and of the whole universe, it will be a cosmopolitan, universal salvation. Tzelem Elokim of every Adam will again be revived, resurrected. But in the meantime, it's like, you know, challenged and limited. That is the idea of Matzor. That's what Chazal said, מיום שחרב בית המקדש אין לו לקדוש ברוך הוא בעולמו אלא דלת אמות של הלכה בלבד. Which means that from the day temple was destroyed, the substitute for the temple, in temple I'm talking about the first temple by tradition, there was Gilui Shechina, Nisim Gluim. So the Gilui Shechina disappeared. Also Nevuah after the Churban Beit Rishon, Beit Sheni, we didn't have any more Nevi'im. There was no Nevuah. Nevuah is the greatest revelation of the Almighty to human beings. All this disappeared. Chacham Adif Menavi still we have. Chacham Adif Menavi means that a great Talmid Chacham, a great scholar, somebody who's Oved Hashem through learning Torah deeply, and he cares and he understands and he believes and he internalizes the idea that Torah is the book of Kadosh Baruch Hu, and this is really the instruction, manual, how to live your life as a Jew, especially as a Jew. If he learns Torah in such a way, then he sometimes has a kind of a revelation, not through Nevuah, but through learning deep, caring, and believing Torah Lishma, like an Ovid. That we have, that's the Dalal Mochalaha. But everybody can hear the connotation, the idea, it's only Dalal Mochalaha. Ela Dalal Mochalaha Bilvat. It's a very much a lot of reservations are put in these few words. Ela Dalal Mochalaha Bilvat. That all is left. It's a lot. Because in this Dalal Mochalaha, you can be like a Navi. You can like rebuild spiritually, mentally, for yourself at least, for your Talmid in Beit HaMikdash. But not outside. Outside. In the time of Beit Rishon, the whole world benefited from Beit HaMikdash. Even the Goyim, even they brought Korbanot and the Beit Bet Filah Yikare Lechol Ha'amim that materialized. So this is the terrible tragedy of the siege. It's a mental siege. It's like Churban HaBayit itself. You know, the famous Midrash, it's brought down only in Russian Kiddushin. We cannot find it in other sources. But it's a famous Midrash. Mizmor le'asaf Elokim ba'u goyim benachlatecha. Mizmor means it's praising Hashem. Asaf is praising Hashem. That goyim ba'u nachlatecha. That the enemies conquered the territory of Hashem, conquered Eretz Yisrael and Beit HaMikdash. Mizmor l'Asaf? How can you sing a hymn to Hashem when you say in the next sentence the worst tragedy? Kina l'Asaf mibayelim. It shouldn't be a mizmor, a hymn, a praising Hashem. It should be a lamentation. Kina l'Asaf mibayelim. It should say Kina l'Asaf elokim ba'u goyim benachlatecha. That's the question of the Midrash. Rashi brings it in Kiddushin. So the answer is Ela she'amar Asaf shira l'Hashem al she'shafach hamato al etzim v'avanim v'lo shafach hamato al am Yisrael v'torat Yisrael. Meaning the spirit still was there. That's what happened in Churban Beit HaMikdash. The siege also did exactly the same thing. The spirit, it was limited. It was limited terribly into Dalet Amot, not to millions of Amot, but to Dalet Amot. But it is in this Dalet Amot, it still exists. Otherwise, it's a terrible narrow-mindedness, the descendant on the world, on the whole universe. Rami Shapira, Zatzal, still say Shlita sometimes. Moshe Shapira Zatzal was a paragon, was really a paradigm and an impersonator of this idea of broad-mindedness through Dalet Amot. He was in this Dalet Amot. He was in his own element and quite closed to the outside world, except when some surprising events he like appeared. But in this Dalet Amot, he was like really a luminary. It was like a firehouse that gave so much light to the people who heard him very close to him, and people from all over, so many segments and sectors, and all over heard him. But usually it's the people with a fine taste, connoisseurs. And so he was mistalik on the day when narrow-mindedness started in the universe. That is the Sarah B'tevet. that a stalkot of such a person is again like reinforcing narrow-mindedness and causes a problem in creating broad-mindedness. Now a little bit about the person, about more like simple words. Moshe Peretz Zatzal was 82 years old when he was Niftar. It was also a shock to many of his Talmidim. We thought he's 25, maybe 50. He was such a young person, such a vivid thinker, so sharp, so much, and really people were worried. Nobody thought he's so sick that he's going to die, but people were worried that his mind might be affected by a growth in his brain tumor and pneumonia. The pneumonia finished him. Anyways, it was 82 years old. He was the older he got, the more fresh and the more invigorating and stimulating became to his Talmidim. Because the sharp mind, real Lithuanian, brisker mind, put together with tremendous intellectual understanding, curiosity and knowledge, and mastering all the disciplines of Torah, create a connotation that is so rare. It's like a bead that goes all over the flowers and collecting the nectar and then makes up some super delicious food. That was where his shurim, especially the shurim to the smaller groups, and he had many shurim to smaller groups, all like different. He was like really escaping exposure. Very interesting. By the way, it's such things exist all over the world. Lahavdil Elf Alfei Havdalot, not only religions, like the Freemasons, it's like a secret organization, or the Scientology, Lahavdil Elf Alfei Havdalot, they should be all dead, they are terrible people. But again, it's like a very secret, if you are there, you know what it is. So Lahavdil Elf Alfei Havdalot, Memtet Sharei Tumah LeMemtet Sharei Kedusha, that's how he was. So he was born 82 years ago in Tel Aviv. He was a very, very close friend, Yibadel Lechaim Arukim, of our Rav Hadari Shlita and Rav Yaakov Katz Shlita. They both grew up with him, children. And he learned in the best yeshivot, close Talmud to the greatest Rashi Yeshivot and Gdolim of those years. He learned in Or Yisrael and Ponevich and Hebron and Brisk and Mir and in Har Fishel, and he learned by Rav Hutner, and he really, like, again, like a bee that collecting the nectar from everywhere. And he knew Shas Be'iyun, tremendous bikius and understanding, and always leaving you with a tremendous stimulating kushia question. Think about it more. Don't imagine that you already exhausted the subject. There's always something more to it, and you can repeat it, and he would sometimes repeat himself. People who wouldn't understand him thought it comes from a kind of weakness. It was like the Maral. Maral also repeats itself, but it's spiral. Like the repetition already like pulls you up to another level. And another repetition adds a third dimension. He was learning in all this yeshivot. He was a Talmid Muvak of Rav Dessler, the Tzal, of all the Gdolim, Rav Shach, and Rav Brisk, Chazonish, and as a young, very young child still. And later on, he was already like a quite well-known Talmid Chacham in the yeshiva world. He became a Talmid of Rav Hutner Zatzal. I had the zechut to learn by Rav Hutner Zatzal, also Pachat Yitzchak for 6 years. So Rav Moshe Shapira was his real mamshich. Again, without any titles or whatever, but that's how I understand it. And both, like Rav Hutner, Rav Shapira was Boki Bishas, Ba'aloche, even Aloche Lemaaseh. And he, like in her official, it was a rabbinical college. kind of a semi-modern place where they prepared rabbonim. So he would teach something very esoteric. He would teach Ilchot Mikvaos. Ilchot Mikvaos. I mean, it's a very tarot. It's a very difficult and esoteric subject. And he was like the Rosh Kollel, where they learned to prepare the rabbonim for mikvot. And through that, he put in all the Brisker Pera, all the Reb Chaims, and all the Gra, and all these Lomdish ideas to the rabbonim. We learned mikvot alacha lemaaseh, but with all the like Rav Soloveitchik writes in Man of Halacha, all these philosophical, mathematical, conceptual ideas of Lomdes, all the way to the Halacha Lemaaseh. But later on, Rav Wotner learned Chavruta Maharal and Kabbalah. And tremendously, all these shurim mostly were around Pirkei Avot or Agadot HaShas. And used so much material that it was mind-boggling. And he read all the philosophy, Greek philosophy, Sartre, French, modern, postmodern, avant-garde philosophy. He knew literature, but again, you never caught him red-handed with this kind of books. He probably didn't read all of them. Maybe he read and he got the idea already through a few pages. I mean, I must confess that I love literature, so when my wife read War and Peace, it's 1,500 pages, so I read only 100 pages. But I asked her to point out the important ideas. I got the message. Then my wife admitted that she read only Peace, not War. She skipped paragraphs talking about the war. But right now I'm reading Thomas Mann, Nobel Prize laureate, who wrote famous five-volume books. Those days they had a lot of time, so they wrote huge books. Five-volume book, Joseph and His Brothers. Thomas Mann was a genius, a literary genius. He got the Nobel Prize. And he knew all the Jewish material, the Midrashic material about Yosef HaTzadik. It's a tremendous work. So again, you cannot read five volumes. I mean, but whatever. I don't know what he did. He wouldn't answer questions about this. But you felt it. And that's how he managed, more than anybody else, Kimat, to reach out to Balei Tshuva. You know, it's easy to Marzi B'Tshuva, a fundamentalist person, a simpleton. But through wonder stories, through this, through that. But to reach a real thinking person, a French intellectual, a Russian philosopher, or all over. And he went to Moscow, he set up a yeshiva, Torat Chaim. And he went to France. He was a very close friend with Rabbi Sitruk, who made many French Jews, Balei Tshuva. French Jews, all these Balei Tshuva were usually great intellectuals. One of these famous Balei Tshuva, you never heard of him probably, was Benny Levy. Benny Levy was an Algerian or Egyptian Jew, as a first cousin of Rav Chaim Sabato, Ibad El Chaim Arukim, who grew up in France and became a professor in the Sorbonne and was the closest person to Jean-Paul Sartre. Jean-Paul Sartre was also a Nobel Prize laureate, was the biggest philosopher, post-war philosopher, who refused to receive the Nobel Prize because he was very much a communist. Benny Levy was his right-hand man. And they, together with Danny Zeret, who is still alive, Benny Levy died already, they did the famous student revolution in the 60s, which almost toppled De Gaulle, the president of France, and changed the world. This was the years of Woodstock and Woodstock and everything. Woodstock, you heard. This is in America. And we still, feel the reverberations of this revolution. And this Benny Levy was a great French philosopher, was exposed to Sartre, who was mamish like semi-god in the intellectual circles of all over the philosophers and thinkers of the world. Okay? This Benny Levy became Baal Tshuva and Talmid Muvekuf Ramay Shapiro. Again, I mean, only he could do it because he was an ambassador of Torah using his tremendous chokhmah and articulate ability and wit and everything and knowledge how to give you Torah without ever having stepped foot in a university or in a high school. Probably not even in elementary school. Also, it taught us to be thirsty for Torah. The Alter from Slabodka, he was a Hebroner. His father was a famous Hebroner also. His father-in-law, Hebron, you know, is was the place where Wooten learned, and many other people got all the treasures of Torah. By the way, Wooten was a Talmud Muvak of Rav Kook while he learned in Hebron in the old Hebron, and also when it moved after the pogroms in 29 to Jerusalem. So the Alter Slabodka, Rav Shapira never met him, he died before he was born, but he was a rebbe of his father. Rav Shapira was very close to his father. His father was a high school teacher in Tel Aviv, and I learned in Yeshiva Chadash, was a yeshiva high school in Tel Aviv, and he was the legendary mythological person who would give you the exam, the oral exam in Gemara. And it was a real challenge to succeed. Baruch Hashem succeeded. It was like so sharp. So with the, it was the father of Moshe Shapira. That's how. Anyway, so he knew a lot of Musar and these things, but they described him over the, you know, the press, Haredi press, general press. I wrote an article about him in the net, in Kikar HaShabbat. So I wrote, I think it was diminutive to describe him, Gaon HaMachshava VaMusar. But also that was much beyond that. But he also was that. So he always would quote the Alter from Slabodka, the Sabbani Slabodka, saying the greatest ma'ala a person can have is not what you are, your knowledge, but the thirst for knowledge. Mevakesh dat. You want always further it. You want always to, you know, climb, continuing, climb the Everest. And that's what happened by Rav Moshe Zatzal. He knew tremendous. He had tremendous masmid and memory. He really a renaissance man. So many talents. And so handsome, by the way. Charismatic. But he always emphasized this point. You have to continue to grow. And he continued to grow. He continued constantly to grow. I remember Yibadel L'chaim Arukim Rav Adar Shlita told me once about Rabbi Yaakov Katz Shlita. Rabbi Yaakov Katz was also, together with Moshe Shapira, one of the heads of the Kolelim of her official, teaching Rabbanim, how to become Rabbanim. So then Rav Adari kind of snatched him away, come to Yeshiva Takota, Rabbi Yaakov Katz. So Rabbi Yaakov Katz said, but I have a position in her official, and said, you will dry up there. Come here. And Rav Adari said, I think I have some shares in the growth. When you are with Talmidim, old or young, whatever, you give shiurim, you talk and learning, whatever, you continue to grow. You never dry out. And that happened with Rav Moshe Shapira. So my time is up. And I just want to say the idea of Kaddish is when such a vacuum is created. Vacuum, you might have not been aware of it before my speech, because I'm not sure that everybody of you have heard of him. He made an effort not to be famous. He made an effort to be like Torah Tanistar, which is so holy and so special because it's Nistar, especially among the Lithuanian Kabbalists. They made a secret of everything. You will ask Rav Nevinzer Shlita about Kabbalah, he says, only a segment is Tarot. But then when he had the 80th birthday, one of the speeches of his, I think one of his sons, like revealed that at the age of 26 already, he corresponded with Reb Chaim Kanievsky about pieces of most esoteric passages in the Zohar. Okay, but it's a secret. You know, we do not advertise. But there is a tremendous vacuum. I feel that a piece of my life really was shattered. And that's how we should all feel as Bnei Torah. Torah matters. It was so intensively, you know, being convincing and convinced in the fact that this is the book of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the user's manual. So this vacuum should be filled. How can it be filled after the siege, after the narrow-mindedness, after the departure of such a great luminary? Everybody can think how to do it, what to do, how to go about it. Rav Shapira was all over the world. He was in Moscow, he was in France, he was in North America, he was in England, he was in South America. was through his privateness and mysterious existence he did. So everybody has his own talents, and Rav Shapira would always emphasize, I'm not like imposing you with my Torah. I want you to express your chelek on your own of the Torah and to teach you how to do it. That's all the job of a teacher, of a mechanic. And that's what we are trying to do. So in the Kaddish you say that this vacuum that like was created by the Istarkut of such a God should be filled what Shamayim was impaired to some extent, and it should be restored. So with your permission, I'll finish with Kaddish de Rabbanan. It's important to say here, especially the Kaddish of Shapira, was for many years coming Vatikin to daven every morning. Somebody drove him and he would do it afterwards. יתקדש מאיר הבא ועלמה דברה כולותי והמליך מלכותי ועצמה פולקני ויקרב משיחי חי חום ויום וחום וחיי דכל בית ישראל בעגלה וזמן קרי ואמרו אמי יתברך וישתבח ויתפעל ויתרומם ויתנשא ויתהדר ויתעלה ויתעלה על שמי דקבוצה ברכו לילה מקום בחתיו שירתת שבחתיו נחמת האדם אירם בעל מה ואומרו אמן על ישראל ועל רבנם ועל תלמידיהם ועל כל תלמידיהם ועל כל מה דעסקים בעולה את הדיבה אתרה קדישה הדם ודבכל אתר ואתר יהיה לו נכון שלמה רבה משמעי החיים ורחם קדם משמעי ועלה ואומרו אמן יהיה שלמה רבה משמעי וחיים טובים עלינו ועל כל ישראל ואומרו אמן עושה שלום במרומה ויעשה שלום עלינו ועל כל ישראל ואומרו אמן
Steinberger,
Is my camera. Did it work?